Hello, listeners, and big congratulations to you for making it this far. On today's show, we will finally, after all this time, be discussing 2018's Avengers Infinity War. That's right, Thanos has arrived. Scarlet Witch and Vision try to mind their own business, but in this movie, the redder the deader. Cap and his secret Avengers been taking some time out to walk on the wrong side of the law. The big green guy asks for a little space and lets Banner do all the Hulk busting. Thor's on a quest to regain his power by taking a few spinning classes and activating his core.
Oh, wow.
Tony's fears become reality.
Yeah.
But do you think he regrets the baggy camo onesie? And while Nebula's stretching out, Gamora eats a little soul food.
She's the dirt.
We'll be discussing all this and more on today's A Marvelous Lunch Break. Joining me today, as always, is Miss Marvel herself, Anna Harrison.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm overwhelmed, my friend.
The final movie.
Yeah.
You feeling good?
Feeling good.
Feeling good. Nice. And of course,
Hi, Dad. It's nice to see you.
The original writing said, and of course, this is potentially wildly inappropriate. Please don't sack me. Of course, very familiar with the Gold Fist. Agent.
Oh my God. Homophobia at its finest. Look, I like a rainbow stone, but that's too far. Hello. I was about to say then how I feel really emotional about the journey that we've been on, but you just ruined it, guys. I remember when we first started, we had a headphone jack clipping mic.
Yep.
We were in a box room.
Yeah.
And now look at us. We've got a nice view.
Yeah.
We've got sponsorship. We've got professional equipment.
PlanetDaddy.com.
We've got, you know, over 1,700 listeners.
Yes.
Like, this is, I'm so happy about where we've come. And just rewatching the MCU has been so magical with you both.
Oh, thanks, Martin.
Let's hold hands.
I feel the same. Let's give Dan a round of applause for his amazing intros.
Yes.
Yay.
Thank you.
And a round of applause to Challenge Annika.
Well, we haven't done this week yet. Jesus.
Not done this week.
What do I bring?
What do you bring? Plenty to the table.
I mean, I do the uploading.
Yeah.
That's
true. You do the graphics.
Yeah.
You sourced the theme tune.
The less I know about the graphics, the better.
Yeah.
You can stop laughing now.
Yeah, a whole visual style. You bring great insight. You bring an alternative opinion to these movies.
Heck yeah.
And, you know, you've enabled us to kind of do this on work time and drink beer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's great. You know, that's another thing to add to the journey we've come. First time, we were sober and shitting ourselves. Now,
we're drunk and couldn't give a shit.
Absolutely. But no, thank you very much to the both of you for coming on this wonderful journey. This is the 18th movie.
Wow.
I can't believe we've done this 18 times.
It's amazing.
No, I don't feel like I've watched a film that isn't a Marvel film in a long time.
No, I started watching, I caught a little bit of Pearl Harbor. I was like, I'd have.
Oh, that's a
weird thing. Iron Man could fix that.
So, I mean, we briefly touched on it there. Anna, are you ready for your final challenge?
Oh my God.
Challenge Annika.
Thanks, Martin. All right.
You bring the themes. I want to say. Okay.
All
I'm
right. Last,
put
last 20 seconds
on the stopwatch. Let's
pressure,
do this for you.
Pressure.
Okay. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. No messing around this week.
Okay.
3, 2, 1. Go.
On his quest to have the universe's population, Thanos goes ever closer to the all 6 Infinity Stones with only the Avengers and their allies in his way. But an intergalactic battle won't be enough to stop him, and with a snap of his fingers, he freaking turns half our heroes to dust and breaks all our hearts.
I mean, there wasn't a huge amount of plot in there,
no.
Was there?
You know what? We'll talk
about
this later.
The movie started, and then it ended.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because I've got a 2-minute.
Okay, well, what was the time on the
how'd I do?
That was 11:77.
Oh, so close to 10 seconds.
But I mean, if you say less, you take less time. So
that's
if you don't describe the plot.
I can't really credit you too hard for that one.
Fair enough.
But you know what? You've got 2 minutes to impress us.
Okay.
Okay?
So, yeah, I will easily say that all my effort has gone into this.
Okay.
Oh, This is the final one, listeners.
God, I'm so nervous. Okay.
Time is getting reset. Are you on in 3, 2, 1? Go.
Grim opening. Asgardian ship getting torn up by Thanos and his kids. Thanos takes the Hulk out and now has a new blue stone to add to his collection. Heimdall sends Bruce home, gets murdered, and as Loki tries to save Thor with his usual tricks, Thanos freaking kills him! Pause for hysterical crying. No time. To Earth. Bruce crashes into Dr. Strange's parlor and a pissing contest between Tony and Strange is interrupted by Thanos' kids after the time stone. Spider-Man gets in on the action, tries to rescue Strange from Squidward, and ends up on a spaceship with a shiny new spider suit and a pissed off Tony. And now, space. Our guardians are rescuing and massaging the beautiful form of Thor. And after the next macho showdown between Star-Lord and Thor, the team split up to get a Thanos killing super weapon and fly out of nowhere to get the Reality Stone. On this side of the pond, Wanda and Vision are having sexy times and bam, getting stabbed. Thanos' kids are on after the Mind Stone, but oh damn it, Secret Avengers to the rescue, led by Captain America and his manly beard. And now they're off to Wakanda, where Suri can get that stone out of Vision's head without killing him, and Cap can reunite with Bucky. Back on wrinkly Voldemort's spaceship, Tony, Peter, and the Magic Cape blast them onto outer space. Tony and the rescued Strange have another testosterone moment, decide to take the fight to Thanos, and Peter is formally inducted into the Avengers. Things are going less well in nowhere. Thanos already has the Reality Stone and takes off with Gamora. Gamora can't stand seeing Sis get tortured and gives up the Power Stone location, while the other Guardians team up with Iron Man, Spider-Man, and Dr. Strange. After more dick measuring, now between Star-Lord and Tony, they form a plan to stop Thanos and rescue Gamora. Too damn bad, because Red Skull Dementor takes Thanos and Gamora to a cosmic gateway where Thanos freaking pushes her off a cliff. More crying. Now plus Power Stone, Thanos shows up on Titan. Epic battle, portals, web-slinging, mood destruction. They get so freaking close, but Quill loses his shit when he hears Gamora's dead. Thanos gets free, takes him down, stabs Tony, and Strange gives up the Time Stone. Epic endgame. Battle in Wakanda is looking grim. But damn, Thor on the scene with his crazy new axe, Groot, and Rocket. So much lightning, swirly gunfire, banter, ladies taking care of business. Thanos' kids are dead, but the man himself is on the ground. He's freaking taking out our heroes. Wanda kills Vision and the stone, but Thanos timey-wimeys, and the Mind Stone is his. Thor's axe in the chest is not enough. Finger snap, death, dust, heartbreak. Thanos smiles. We all cry.
Oh, great. I'm going to give you my round of applause, which I held back there. You did that in 1 minute 40, and I think that is more words than I've ever heard out of come out of someone's mouth.
Oh my God.
In a day.
Can we submit that clip to the Guinness World Records? That's got to be the most words in 1.5 minutes.
I can't believe it. 1 minute 40?
1 minute 40.
Wow.
Do you need
really
a paper bag
down.
To breathe into? You're kind okay.
I'm feeling lightheaded, yeah.
Very well done on that.
So yeah.
How you got that whole movie into 1 minute 40. And you covered pretty much everything as well.
And I had to covered, do it from like, memory. The themes as well. And, you know, the dick measuring was a highlight for me.
You should post a text version of this for our listeners to read.
I will do.
Could you actually send it to me? Because I really struggle to write the descriptions for these podcasts.
You
I
bet.
Could just copy and paste that.
Oh, snap.
Excellent. Well, thank you. Thank you, listeners. That was the end of Challenge Annika.
Maybe next week.
We'll see.
On our final show, which we'll talk to you
could
about.
Could you do the whole MCU in 2 minutes?
Oh, my God, no.
You're just stealing all my lines.
Surely it would take me longer. It would take more than 2 minutes just to read, like, all the titles. It feels like it would. Anyway,
okay. We'll see. All of the key events in the MCU.
I've just seen what's in your hand.
We've upgraded this week, listeners. Usually I come with a list of character names, but this week I've got a whole sheet of pictures, just in case I forgot what people's faces look like. Or I said a name and someone's like, who was that?
That's a lot of characters.
So many.
This was the top 4 rows. So there was more rows under this. But kicking off with the cast, as we do every week, please, this is the final time we're doing this, because I tell you what, on our wrap-up episode next week, I'm not reading out every single person that's ever been in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Thank God.
Okay. So give it everything. 4. Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man.
Oh, yes. Yeah. It's
my favourite of all the Iron Men.
Standing
Chris
up.
Pratt as Star-Lord.
Heck yeah. Made some bad choices, but fine.
Josh Brolin as Thanos.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Chris Evans as Captain America.
Yes, forever.
Yeah, I want to touch his beard.
Scarlett Johansson as Black Widow.
Oh, incredible.
Kicking ass and taking names.
Chris Hemsworth as Thor.
Yes. Lightning God.
Elizabeth Olsen as Wanda Maximoff.
Welcome back, girl.
Yeah, fine.
I mean, listen, if you want to skip ahead 30 seconds and just go read IMDb, you're more than welcome, but we're not going to stop. Tom Holland as Spider-Man.
Yes!
Benedict Cumberbatch as Doctor Strange.
Yeah. Oh, I'm all right with it.
Karen Gillan as Nebula.
Redemption.
Yeah.
The revenge. Oh, wait. Zoe Saldana as Gamora.
Yes, tears forever.
Mark Ruffalo as Hulk.
No.
Vin Diesel as Groot.
He is Groot.
No.
Dave Bautista as Drax.
Yes.
Welcome, buddy.
Sebastian Stan as Bucky.
Yes.
Yay.
Paul Bettany as Vision.
Yeah.
Oh, so long.
Benedict Wong as Wong.
Fine. All right.
Bomb Clementif as Mantis.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah.
Stan Lee.
As the bus driver.
There we go.
I'm your kid, Jared.
That's the first time I've ever credited Stan Lee as well.
Yeah. Who's he higher than?
Who's
in the listing?
Well, this is in order.
So he's like halfway down.
He's higher than Tom Hiddleston as Loki.
Tom!
Danai Gurira as Okoye.
Yeah.
Yep.
Benicio del Toro as The Collector.
Yeah.
Magnificent.
Magnificent.
Anthony Mackie as Sam Wilson.
Yes.
Peter Dinklage.
Yeah.
All right.
Where's the hammer?
Someone called Terry Notary as Groot, who I'm imagining does the motion capture.
Okay, it must be a kid or something. Yeah.
No, it's a man.
All right.
He's the one who has a jaw bucket on his head.
No, but he's tiny. He's like adolescent. Weird. All right, yeah.
Anyway.
Welcome.
Welcome to our lineup. Good to have you here. Idris Elba as Heimdall.
Short and sweet.
So low down that I think it's not justified. Chadwick Boseman as Black Panther.
What? I was wondering where he was going to come in. He's below motion capture guys. That's insane.
Oh, he is.
Underused.
Here is the people. These top four rows, or maybe the top three rows, are the people who've got great contracts.
Yeah.
Here are the people who just really want
to
be in the MCU.
They just need to hire some like SEO experts.
Yeah, they need to up their ranking.
Yeah.
But anyway, Chadwick Boseman as Black Panther.
Yeah.
Bradley Cooper as Rocket Raccoon.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
Carrie Coon, Proxima Midnight.
Oh, we got to have a talk about her.
Tom Vaughn, and the rest of it's cut off, but it's a double-barreled name there that starts with L-A. So what do you think that's going to be?
Vaughn-la.
Tom Vaughn...
La.
La.
I think that's it. Just stands.
Yeah.
As Ebony Maw.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
You're going to have to help me remind me of who's who.
Yeah, totally.
Oh, yeah, I liked him.
Letitia Wright as Shuri.
Yes. Oh, missed you.
Gwyneth Paltrow as Pepper Potts.
Oh, get out.
She was there.
I tell you what, if you can name the final one, I'll buy one of you a cookie.
Whoever,
who's missing?
Whoever plays Black Dwarf?
No.
Who's missing?
It's got to be like a real quick throwaway. Spider-Man's friend.
Ned.
Ned.
Not Ned.
Oh. And that was not a good, quick shout, though.
Not a quick throwaway, either.
Oh, really? Oh.
Don Cheadle as War Machine.
Oh, no, Don.
Poor Don.
Oh, no.
I mean, at least he's not on the...
Is this just a ranking of like people's favorites?
There's no way Chadwick would be at the bottom, then. No.
Chris Pratt, though, make it in a second spot.
Yeah. That's
I've got a lot of faith in him.
That's not the ranking I would give to these films. But anyway, we don't have time to get into that.
Okay.
Speaking of cookie, I have Thanos cookies. I forgot to bring... I'll bring them in later.
Who... stands out for you in this picture?
Oh, in the picture?
Well, I mean...
In the movie.
Oh, okay, in the film. Yeah. Okay.
So, for me, I think the people who I really enjoyed watching this film, firstly, Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
as Iron Man, just completely threw himself in from the off. It's like, it's Thanos, this is my time, I know this may be the end of me, this is what I've been waiting for, it's time to get this.
Oh yeah.
It's time to get all my anxiety, all my making suits, making an arm around the world, this is what it's been leading up to. And I really believed in it. And I'm not the biggest Iron Man fan, I've not been throughout the whole 18 episodes, but this one I was like, oh, that was exceptional. So him, I like him a lot. I think while she had quite a small role, Black Widow, being the one to kind of be the first one to really stick a knife in one of Thanos' children.
Yeah.
Like the fact that it was her was really good. Really liked that. And Black Panther.
Yeah.
He's not in it much, but I like Black Panther a lot.
Oh, yeah.
For me, Thanos, like of all the anxiety I had, I was so worried about what this character was going to be like in this film. All this build-up and the portrayal. I mean, we're going to get more into sort of his motivation and what he kind of brought to the film, but Brolin... flipping nailing it, and some of the best CGI I've seen on a character, just his physicality, his movements, even just like the kind of casual flicks of his hands and everything. I was just captivated by it.
The scale of Thanos reminded me so much of Gandalf in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah,
how is he so much bigger than everyone?
Oh, I loved it. So
it's just insane.
So Brolin is well up there for me. I agree with Tony as well. That was great. And I still love Spider-Man. Like, Peter, the Tom Holland's Peter Parker is just so, so good. And I gotta say, even though he sort of was like on a side adventure to a lot of characters most of the time, Thor, like his two entrances in this film, like at the very beginning, his brief, really emotional chat that he has with Rocket, and then his final entrance on the battlefield.
Oh yeah.
I just
got a little electric running through me then.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Like we've talked in previous podcasts about not putting everything in the trailer. The fact that he wasn't on my radar whatsoever to be in that scene. And then he just came in and he electrocuted everyone. Oh, that was
the only bit of the trailer is when he turns around and he's like, who are you guys?
Yeah.
And it's the Guardians. Yeah. That's it.
I don't know why I didn't ever see him coming to Earth in this film. No. It just completely surprised me.
I thought he was in space.
Yeah.
And then finally, I gotta say, Black Widow is great, but also I think Zoe Saldana, she did a good, like, she had a lot of heavy lifting to do in this film, and I think she did a really, really good job. And the final scene of the three ladies fighting together was just, with, like, as much testosterone that was getting flung around in this film, seeing the three ladies just come together to get shiz done.
I really loved in that moment that it was Scarlet Witch that came down to save them. Mm-hmm. Like, it was another woman saving the women, and it wasn't, like,
another amazing joke as well. And it was like, we had her the whole time.
Yeah.
It's like, come on. Yeah. I laughed every time I've seen it. I've seen this movie 5 times now.
Amazing.
But I laughed every time that line. It's because it's a funny line, but it's delivered perfectly as well.
And it would be from a general as well. She's like, who's directing this? Like, who's this happening?
Absolutely. I tell you what. There's two other things that stick out to me from this cast list is that there's a few people who maybe went a bit missing in this movie. Mm. Let me hit you with the Winter Soldier.
Mm-hmm.
Not really
minor.
Anywhere to be seen.
Very minor.
Especially his dusting. What are we calling it? His dusting?
Yeah, we're saying dusting.
We're bringing Buffy back. People got dusted.
I thought that was a miss for me.
Oh, really? I thought it was quite profound.
It was just there were so many that happened in such quick succession.
That's true.
That was the first one.
Yeah.
It didn't have enough time for me for it to be like
he's lost him. Yeah.
Given how much we've had a whole film called The Winter Soldier for crying out loud.
Yeah.
Like there should have been more in that moment.
I can only because Captain America had a really limited screen time, I felt like, in this as well. I think if Cap had been more of a centerpiece of this film, which might be in the next one, I think that Bucky moment could have been more impactful.
Someone else I think went a little bit missing, Falcon.
Okay, see this was the dusting that for whatever reason that one really, really hit me. I think because like the Bucky one, you're right, that happened quite quickly. Things were happening. There was something about Sam being on the ground, and when he was sort of, because he had been slammed by Thanos and his wings were broken, and there was something about him like dragging himself up and dusted as like Don was calling for him, for whatever reason, that was the moment that like really hit me in the chest so hard.
I think he was in the right place in this film. I think he got enough screen time, he fit in the plot well. I didn't need any more from him. I thought it was fine. He did a lot of good explosions with his little drone things.
I've just realized as well that we completely forgot to give everyone a spoiler warning. So, by the way, there are spoilers in this podcast.
Oh,
when we're talking
on.
About people dusted, we're on about the end of the movie where they all die.
I'm pretty sure by 2 minute, if anyone could understand it.
Yeah. If you don't want to spend some money to go see the movie, just
there
go back
go.
To the start of this podcast.
Yeah.
Then you're all up to date and you can listen to the spoilers.
Yeah.
I think on the flip side, the other thing that stands out to me here is that there's not just one redemption story. For me, there's two.
Okay, who have we got?
You said Nebula.
Yeah.
I say Groot.
Oh, yeah.
Wow, because I remember when we recorded Guardians 2,
hate.
You were like, if he's a teenager throughout the whole of Infinity War, I'm going to... You said some very bad things about Groot.
I was really worried that teenage Groot would ruin this movie in the way that Baby Groot kind of stole the show and ruined bits of Guardians 2. I was like, Teenage Groot is going to get in the way here. Barely seen the whole movie and has just one little moment. It's not even a huge moment, but it's just one little moment. In fact, two moments where I was like, yeah, Groot. And that's the same feeling I had in Guardians. The first one was when he breaks off his arm to make the handle. And, where's the handle? I need to find the handle. And Groot just kind of...
Poor project manager.
Sorts it out and kind of grows up in a way.
Yeah.
That was that, because that echoed his sacrifice in the first Guardians film, right?
Absolutely. And I was like, Groot, well done. That's great. And it was very symbolic. That was like the hammer of the Stormbreaker as well. It's awesome. Cool. The second moment was on the battlefield. Where it's like, Groot doesn't even do anything, just gets CGI'd there. And it's like, Thor's like, Captain America, this is true. He's like, I am Groot. I am Steve Rogers. How they got so many laughs in this movie.
I guess, also, Groot right at the end as well, when it's the Thanos battle, and he has a quick moment where he's done his move where he plunges the roots into the ground to come up and get Thanos. Like, he had him there for like a really quick moment, I liked that he had his fight moment there. Yeah.
It's just unreal how they've got those in this movie, how they've got the funny moments, like the side-splittingly funny moments,
totally,
and the really sad moments.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel like you're being dragged around a lot. It feels like you just very nicely flowed between it all.
Totally.
And we're probably about to go into 30, 40 minutes of fawning over some of the better parts of this movie. And probably papering over the bad bits.
But I did really like that when everyone was trying to take down Thanos, you really got a sense of who was powerful in which way. Mm. Like, it wasn't just, there is a bad guy and he's just going to wipe everyone out, which he does in the end. Yeah. But it was like, some people have a really good shot at him, some people... I just like.
But they're going to try anyway,
I shouldn't clip my fingers when I do that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, Falcon doesn't get anywhere near.
No.
But yeah, Captain America gets a little smacking.
Yeah.
Mm. I love that moment when Thanos is like looking at him. Like, Thanos is like giving him like a proper, like, this isn't what I expected look. And oof.
And one of the best fighty moments with him is not that final bit, I think, but where Tony Stark is like, all that for a drop of blood. It's like, I could imagine Nebula saying that. Yeah. Runs in the all that for a drop of blood.
Yeah. Totally.
Thanks, Dad.
It runs in the family, right? Yeah. That sassiness. But
Can we talk about Nebula's redemption? Because you know how much I
hated
Nebula in the other films. In this film, I quite liked her. Mm. And I think that really overdone... She overplays it. She overacts it throughout the whole thing. But that moment when she was being stretched...
Oh.
That really chilled me, like that was probably the most emotive moment in the film for me, not in terms of like sadness, but that's the one that moved me the most. It felt so real.
You know, one of the things you said in a previous podcast about Nebula was that she just runs around and she's screaming all over the place. Mm. And in this one, it turns out it wasn't the screaming, it was just the running around.
The physical motion of that sort of stretching your heart, like, you could see how it was painful.
Oh my god.
And it sort of, and then, you know how we talk about kind of like the next movie sometimes makes another movie worth it. You couldn't have had that moment between her and Gamora without Guardians 2 and them kind of trying to heal their relationship, because if it went straight from Guardians 1 to this, it would have been still horrible to see someone being treated that way, but I don't know if I would have believed Gamora feeling bad about it.
I think they could.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
I think they could have done.
But the imagination of whoever came up with that shot for it to look like she's just held on string, for the camera to pan round, like, you don't get many moments like that anymore, do you?
You've almost seen it as Gamora as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just absolutely incredible. And then I really love the second moment where she came to kill Thanos, and she literally, like, she has a thing about driving spaceships to people and just, like, complete self-sacrifice, and she does, like, have a good go at him.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that was really
good.
And
I like that she got, like, she got close, and even when he caught her, he's like, she came really close to killing me when I got her, and now I've done this thing to her. And I think that was the most formidable I've ever felt. She was, like, I always kind of dismissed her before in the previous ones, but, that was really interesting.
You could really get a sense of why her struggle between Thanos and Gamora was important as well, and how it really affected her character. I advocated a lot for Nebula in the first film being poorly written and not really just getting the time to have a developed story. Guardians 2 all around was a shit show, but on this one, Nebula's totally brought it back.
Yeah.
I totally think that there's probably a lot more Nebula to come in the MCU.
But again, I think that talks to the strength of there was this emotional touchstone in Gamora. Like when she is, you know, going hell for leather on Titan fighting Thanos, it's motivated by she knows he's done something to Gamora, and that's what's really driving her. And I think it's given her so much more the kind of credibility as a character, and that was cool.
Mm. And Nebula was, of course, in the final battle scene, the not really the forgotten battle scene, but the alternative battle scene, really, on Titan.
The battle scene was amazing.
Because you have the big, emphatic Thanos is on Earth, of course, everyone's charging towards him. But actually, the huge bit before that, all of the action is on Titan. Where they're doing this choreographed jumping around. Nebula obviously drives a ship, but my favorite attack on Thanos, I think, was probably the Star-Lord bomb on the back, jump through the hole, boom! Flips the finger. It was great.
My favorite bit of that particular bit on Titan, where I think I actually like leaned forward out of my seat, is when Spider-Man got the glove off, and then Thanos just like pinched it back.
It was so close.
Like I would have never, like, we've made loads of predictions about this film, but getting the Infinity Gauntlet off, off Thanos, I was just, it was so close to success.
It was crazy, and him like screaming, like him like yelling, like I've got it, it's coming, and.
I can hear him say Mr. Stark when you just hint at that scene. But you know, if they had got the glove off Thanos, one of the big things that we'll have to see happen in the next movie is that someone else wields the glove to reverse all this. Yeah. Potentially. I mean if that's the way they go.
Mm.
Who do you think is able to wield that glove?
Well,
Anna's got a theory.
I was maybe going to save this for our wrap-up episode, but I'll go. Since you brought it up.
Okay, no, wait, let's theorize in this episode.
Okay, so I think maybe Guardians 1 has sort of set the scene of an Infinity Stone can be wielded if it's shared among people. And I think maybe now that the Gauntlet has united all the Infinity Stones, it can be shared out, like with each person.
So everyone jams a hand in there, or?
Well, or holds it, or something. There's sort of like a sharing of strength. And sort of throughout this, I've been thinking, like, these freaking Infinity Stones, I've been so ready for them to be gone. But I think actually, maybe with one less tentative link, I think each of these stones, you can really tie it to a certain Avenger. Like, I think the Mind Stone is Tony. I think the Soul Stone is Cap. I think the Space Stone is...
Whoa, slow down. Let's get this. So you think do you start with the time stone?
No, so I think there is probably endless speculation about this. This is just me.
Gives you thoughts.
So I would equate the Mind Stone to Tony.
Okay, why?
Just like that, at the end of the day, that is his superpower. Like the power of his mind,
he built Vision with it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, and these are only OG Avengers. Like, I haven't considered anyone else. Cap, Soul Stone.
Because he's got soul?
Yeah, it's his power. I think that's sort of the touchstone of his power as well. Hulk, Power Stone.
Mm-hmm. This is powerful. Strongest Avenger.
Yeah, strongest Avenger.
Hello, strongest Avenger.
Space, Thor. Asgardian, sort of the space power. Okay. Yeah. Now, these two are a little bit more tenuous, but I still think... So, time... I've got with Black Widow. She's constantly talking about how she wants to make up for what she's done in her past. Like, her time looms so large in her presence. And then I've got Hawkeye for reality, because he...
We've got one left over.
But I think also he's someone who's actually always been the most grounded in reality. Like,
you've been parroting this for like 18 weeks now.
He's got the touchstone of his family.
Grounding in this movie.
Yeah, he's got the touchstone of his family. So I could potentially see the OG Avengers wielding the Infinity Stone to bring everyone else back they're going to have to sacrifice themselves to do it, but I see them doing it.
It's like Captain Planet.
Yeah. Like Captain Planet. Anyway, there you go. Now that I've hijacked the podcast.
No, well, that's completely fine. And I think, you know, you talk about Iron Man and this all being in his mind and everything, but this whole movie has been Tony Stark's fear this whole time.
Totally.
And this is what he's been preparing for. He even says it as soon as Doc Strange comes through and is like, he's getting the talk from him without any convincing, just like, okay, this is it.
He says this is it,
which
is such a unusual thing to say.
Get your hands off the cauldron of the cosmos.
Oh god, I'll over now. Jesus.
But he doesn't at all put up a fight.
And it's, I think I was a bit sad that we didn't get more Cap in this film, because it's always going to be Cap or Iron Man, isn't it, really? But actually, looking at the whole MCU and how far we've come, and that it started with Iron Man, it did kind of make sense that it finished with Iron Man. I know this isn't the last film, but it something has finished with this film, and I think that's an interesting arc.
I think Tony's when Tony got stabbed at the end, I was like,
I was so sure.
Oh, yeah, that's his story. Yeah. There it is. That's it done. And if it had it ended like that, it'd have been sad and poignant. And I think we might be sat here going, does it feel a little bit unfinished? But I think it would have felt totally right that the thing that he's been advocating for and afraid of this whole time, especially when Thanos is like, knows of him, like, I know who you are, you know, you're burdened like I am with this knowledge. It's like, it's almost the, you know, Tony Stark's always got someone of the opposite mindset, whether it's Civil War and it's him and Cap, or it's this and it's him and Thanos. There's always someone that's like in the same space and has the same intentions, but is just of the opposite side. And I think that's been the thing that Tony's struggled to come to terms with the most in the whole of the MCU and the whole of his story, is that actually he's not too dissimilar from all the bad guys. But I thought it would have totally been the right ending if he'd have been stabbed, but only if it was to save everyone.
And I can't see him dying not in the presence of the other Avengers.
No.
Like, they all need to be together again if there's going to be... If one of them's going to go, I think they still have to be together.
I think he needs to die in order to win. And if he'd have died on Titan, that wasn't winning.
No.
I think if he dies, it will be so that someone can win against Thanos. But on the theme of kind of endings... The ending for me, I found a little bit frustrating, purely because they changed the name from Part One to not have Part One on it. Because I felt like every other MCU film does it really well, where they lead into something bigger than itself, but it's still a fully contained film. Whereas this one, I know not everyone is dusted. Like, I know we're gonna get them back in some point. I know that Thanos hasn't won, because I know there's another film coming. But this film didn't feel like a complete, finished, complete, ended movie. It felt like part one of a two.
I think the difficulty is, because it's a third movie, it almost feels like it should be the end of a trilogy. But actually, and even within movies with the larger franchises, like, for example, Star Wars or Fast and the Furious, there are like definitive kind of sections of movies. So like Fast and Furious, you'd be like the first two movies, and then they've started doing like mini trilogies within that. Star Wars is the original trilogy, the prequel trilogy, the sequel trilogy, and even though they all add to a larger universe and story, they're their own self-contained stories. This, the end of a third movie, is like, oh, there's more to come, but you've not told us whether it's going to be a part four or just...
It did feel a little bit odd to me. And the comparison I made would be to Harry Potter, like the part one and part two of The Deathly Hallows. I expected part one to end like that because I knew part two was
going to...
Do you think... Oh, sorry.
No, I agree, actually. Like, I think it would make more sense just to have upfront acknowledged that we're breaking our final film into two parts, because I don't think anyone's going to complete... Like, I know it was a really long movie. I didn't notice. I'm happy for it to have been that long to tell that story and have all those beats in it. So I think they wouldn't have lost anything by saying part one, part two.
Why do you think the removed part two. Why do you think they said it's not part two anymore? After seeing this movie now, is there any hints for what you think part two might be called, or what it might be about, or why they might have changed it?
I don't know. I have no idea what it could be called. And I thought maybe it might be called something like Reborn or something like that. Something lame along those lines.
If it's called Avengers Reborn, what did I waste my time on?
But I think the main reason they've done it is just because they want to have a different title. They just don't want it to be part one and part two. They want to have the poignancy of whatever it is they're going to call it. But it sort of seems like, I mean, they haven't released the title yet, so it must give away something flipping massive. And I wonder if they're waiting, we won't get the title to after Captain Marvel.
You see, I've been wondering whether they actually shot themselves in the foot by telling us part two in the first place, because it almost left no suspense for whether this movie would end on a cliffhanger.
Well, we already did it,
so
because
I guess they tried to retcon that for the fans that didn't know, the more casual fans.
But you already have the problem of they've already announced a Spider-Man, they've already announced a Black Panther 2, and the fact that Spidey and Black Panther get dusted.
But I mean, we know that, and a lot of people who are kind of on the pulse and love the Marvel Universe know that, but do you think the people who maybe went and see a few Avengers movies and maybe they saw a Thor movie and now they're here watching Avengers, do you think they knew that, or do you think they were just here for, oh, right, it's the next Marvel movie?
I don't think superhero films ever finish with the bad guy winning.
Yeah.
And I know that's what made this film shocking and made the ending so horrific, but it's also really unbelievable. Like, you know, even if you don't watch any other Avengers film, like, you've watched enough superhero films in the world to know that the bad guy never wins. And for the bad guy to win and it just to end is...
Mm. Okay. So my husband went to see this movie with me. He doesn't usually like watching Marvel movies, but he genuinely enjoyed this, and he thought like the ending was kind of poignant and interesting, but he was the same. He was like, I know they're coming back, so I don't really care. I didn't feel like there was jeopardy. But I think for me anyway, especially us having done this rewatch, and I think for a lot of Marvel fans who have been, you know, closely following these films and have come to know these characters, the ending and the emotion of that came from knowing so clearly what this has cost them to have Tony have Peter disappear in his arms, and for Cap to watch Bucky go, and for Thor to not get his revenge. I think like that has to be the emotional driver of that ending. So whether or not it's the ending of the film, I think it's ended on a poignant enough moment that I feel sort of like justified is the wrong word, but sort of I feel satisfied with what they gave us to have to close out this part of the chapter on.
Wow. And do you think we've been spoiled for the past 10 years knowing every single step that Marvel's about to make?
Yeah,
in glossy
absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Titles released and the images released for it and everything.
Well, I mean, I cannot wait to see what happens next. Like, I'm so excited for next year.
Next year? Well, I've got a running theory.
Go on then.
I think it's coming out this Christmas.
What? But surprise, Marvel.
Look at me like I'm crazy.
Wait, when is Captain Marvel coming out?
That's not until next year.
Yeah, next. So it's got the spring release next year. Just hear me out.
Okay, go for it.
Nothing has been released about it. Obviously, they want a surprise. Mm-hmm. Okay. As well, Disney have no Christmas title coming out this year. And look at how stacked their previous Christmases have been. Full of Star Wars, full of Frozen, full of Pixar movies, full of Marvel movies. They've had the Christmas period is Disney now. They sell toys, they do everything at that time of year. Nothing in 2018. Just saying, big movie, Comic-Con, announce, it's coming this year, everyone.
That would be...
It's called this.
Nuts.
Buckle up.
I mean, they've filmed it all.
How mental.
It's true.
It's already done. It's already completely sealed. I've been saying it for a while that Marvel are due a big surprise.
Wow.
And we're yet to have it. And I think if you're in cinemas on December the 15th...
we will bow down to you, Dan.
Box of popcorn.
I think it'll be a Boxing Day. They always bring out a film on Boxing Day, don't they? She's got Hugh Jackman in it.
Oh.
I think if my only sort of wrinkle in that, I cannot see them doing this movie without Carol Danvers. And I don't know if maybe she'd get introduced in this one, and then the Marvel movie coming out is her backstory. I think particularly when we talk about the end credits, and the only, when you ask like who could wield the gauntlet, while I like my theory more, I think Carol Danvers probably can.
Okay. I mean, I logically, I'm with you, but the giddy, excited fanboy in me goes, maybe it's this Christmas! When really it's next Christmas. This year I'll just be sat at home like, okay, fine. Fine, I'll just have the Infinity War Part 1 action figure. But no, definitely, it kind of cuts us off and leaves us floating in a bit of a abyss that we're not necessarily sure about at the minute. Mm. Which is interesting for Marvel. And I think, personally, I've thought for a couple of years now that Marvel is in a difficult position going into Act 2.
Mm.
When Avengers Infinity War Part 2, or whatever it ends up being called, wraps up, and they announce Act 2, Phase 4, there's going to be so much scrutiny on, can it live up to Act 1? Yeah. Can it live up to the past 21 movies? And I think what we're going to see with Infinity War Part 2, or whatever it's called, is a bit of a twist that wraps a lot of things up, but introduces the future for us, so that it's almost the first movie of Phase 4, so that there's no one asking questions, because you already know what it's going to look and feel like, rather than leaving you on this cliffhanger that's maybe like a new Avengers lineup or something.
Yeah.
That's my personal thought about it.
I thought we were doing conspiracy theories in next week's podcast, but apparently this is... Welcome to the conspiracy theory podcast.
What else do we have left?
I mean, I think the most interesting thing as well, like kind of leading into the second one, is after the sting at the end, it always has like, who will return? And this one, it was just Thanos. Thanos will return. And he was such an interesting villain. I mean, his motivation was so interesting. Mm. Like, I really, really appreciate it. I did not know what they were going to hang this on. And I thought this idea of, you know, a maniac who thinks he has the key to longevity, like, you know, people sustaining themselves is genocide. It was great. Thank God it wasn't Lady Death. Thank God.
Yeah. It was definitely very easy to understand as well, the way that Marvel presented it to people.
Yeah.
It was just, here's why and here's the problems. And you could kind of relate that to issues on Earth, where, you know, we talk a lot in research and science about overpopulation and overcrowding and how do we solve those problems, where you could see Thanos bring that to life and just be like, oh, we solve it by killing half the people. And it kind of makes you sit back and go, do I agree with him?
Yeah.
Am I a bad person for agreeing with him? You know, I can see his solution and he was right. But obviously, he's a massive maniac for actually doing it.
Yeah.
And Thanos is definitely the main character in this film, isn't he? Like, and that never happens for a villain. Like, I know we get really kind of, you know, well thought out villains in the Marvel Universe, but we've never had one of them where they're the main character. Maybe Ultron a little bit because he was in the title, but there was a lot of Thanos in this, and a lot of emotions for Thanos as well. Like, he kills his daughter. That was a relatively sad moment. Oof.
I was surprised how powerful that moment was.
I mean, there's so much we haven't touched on this movie, but let's just go in on that. Wow, when they get to that planet, I've forgotten what it's... Vormir.
Yeah.
Red
Skull. Whoa.
Whoa! That was out of nowhere. Honestly.
I was shooketh.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure one of you two in a far distant podcast when we were just like, you know, riffing, and I think it might have been you, Martin, being like, Red Skull comes back or something like...
I remember we said that another villain from one of the other films may make an appearance. I remember that.
It wasn't Hugo Weaving, though. They hired a because apparently Hugo didn't want to do it or there's scheduling conflicts, and it's someone who's really good at Hugo Weaving impressions.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought he was better.
He was great. I thought he was great.
He looked like...
That was a surprise.
They really did disheveled Red Skull very well.
Dementor Red Skull.
Oh, it was incredible. And I think my favourite bit about it was in the cinema. me and you, Anna, went to the midnight showing together, and there was two or three people next to us who were just like, is that Red Skull? I was like, I almost wanted to turn and be like, I fucking know, right? It's Red Skull. But obviously it's in the cinema and we're not absolute trash human beings. But you could sense, there was a few moments in this movie where you could sense the audience were like,
oh yeah.
Yeah.
That was one of them. The other one was when we first hear the Wakanda music.
Amazing.
So they're at the Avengers HQ and it's like, we need to go hide out somewhere else because we're convicts, right? And you just hear that little bit of music.
That one lick, oh.
Oh, I'm spine, everything's tingling now. It's insane. It's such a great piece of music of itself.
Yeah. Right?
I've listened to that soundtrack. So I've listened to the soundtrack a few times, the Kendrick Lamar soundtrack, but I've listened to the original score a bunch times more than that. It's phenomenal.
It's great.
And they've nailed everything about it, and it's such a recognisable tune. And you know that when you go to Wakanda, exciting things are happening.
Totally.
And every other character, well, a lot of other characters have three movies behind them.
Yeah.
And Black Panther just has one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's like more exciting than anything.
Do you think it was the right decision to put that movie, the last movie before Avengers?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too.
It was the right spot for it to be. I was really surprised that there wasn't more stuff happening on Earth, because the trailer is mainly Wakanda, really, isn't it? Like, a lot of the shots are of Wakanda, and I was surprised at how much wasn't on Earth in this film. I thought we would have seen more of stuff in Scotland. I thought there'd have been another piece with what I would call Secret Avengers or Covert Avengers. I thought there'd be another.
You would call Secret Avengers. Give me a low key high five. Yeah, it's reality. Deal with it.
Okay. Loki.
Sorry, I didn't mean to say Loki there.
I just thought there'd be more. I don't know. I thought there'd be more stuff happening on Earth. Yeah. We moved around a lot of new planets very quickly in this film, and it was a bit like, whoa, everything. And they were all like vaguely purple and didn't have a lot of like furniture or buildings on them. Like, they're all quite barren.
Yeah.
That surprised me. I didn't hate it. It was just a lot of space at me quite quickly.
Speaking of space, though, when the title of Space comes up on the screen.
Oh.
That's another moment. There were so many great cinema moments where everyone was like,
the audience definitely reacted to
Space.
That.
Space. Yeah. It's the Guardians. And they had a great song.
Yeah. I thought only one, which I thought was a really good choice.
Like, agreed.
It wasn't like
their intro.
Guardians on the screen, time for an 80s track. It was just one.
It was straight back to the Guardians that I love as well.
Yeah.
You know, there was none of that Guardians 2 bullshit. None of that. It was just like, they're all singing, they're in
dynamic
space.
Yeah.
He's got sideburns now. Okay, that's cool.
Gained a bit of weight.
He's taking the piss out of Thor. And he's,
oh, that was so funny.
You will not take our ship.
Christ, there are a lot of like testosterone moments in this.
But also, the two Guardians that I love the most, Drax and Mantis, they got a really good showing in this film.
They did.
Like, either action or humour. Like, they did both really well. And I thought that scene where Thanos was bending reality and made them kind of melt and
turn Drax into like bricks.
That was really,
I thought that
weird.
Was it for them for a second.
Yeah,
like,
me too. I thought
that
was
it.
Gone. But the moment where Mantis is like on top of Thanos, controlling his mind.
Wow.
Girl is
like,
powerful. Like,
I was like, she can do that to Thanos. That's wearing amazing. Two Infinity Stones. Like, are you kidding?
That was amazing. I loved all of them working together in that till Quill effed it up. But and I think the really great bit as well, like the sort of dynamic the Guardians are, I was nervous about how everyone was going to interact with one another, and like that, all their scenes together on Titan. Well, you know, like when the Guardians like first join up with the Peter.
Gamora?
Why is
Gamora?
Oh my god! Good, so good, and just all the interactions. Like, are we supposed to say Jesus? You know, just it was so funny, and I like there were a couple moments where it was just
I keep remembering jokes.
I know,
so
I keep
remembering
jokes
so good.
Too.
Well, the bit where he's like, you know, he does the Jesus thing, and he's like, where are you from? He's like, Missouri.
Yeah.
And he's like, that's on Earth.
Yeah.
He's like, where are you from? Earth.
But, like, there were so many beats where, like, everything just sort of kept making so much sense. Like, even when they've lost the battle, people are flying through the air, and Peter's, like, capturing them, and he's like, I'm sorry, I don't know your names.
Yeah.
And it's just, like,
that's beautiful.
All their interactions were so, like, Yes, that's exactly how Strange would speak to Tony. Yes, that's exactly how, like, Tony would think about Drax. Like, it was so great to see.
What master do you serve?
The
goofs in this movie are great.
So good. And like you said earlier, just, like, perfectly balanced with some real, like, heart-rending moments. I think there is a real kind of profound juxtaposition as well with the action and then some, like, really quiet beats. Like, the really quiet way in which Loki was killed and the really quiet way in which Gamora was killed. Mm. And then you have, like, the big battle happening at the end and then the very quiet dusting of people. That really kind of added another intense intensity. It was funny because I remember you said at the previous podcast you thought it'd be really interesting if Loki died. Mm. And I think... I don't want him to go. I think he's probably really dead, unfortunately. I think he's probably dead. We might see him in a flashback in the next one, but... Yeah.
So do you think the people who non-dusting died are dead?
Dead, yeah.
Gamora? Do you think Gamora's dead?
This is really hard for me to... The Time Stone just sort of changes everything, doesn't it? It makes it really difficult
And the fact that Doctor Strange has seen the outcome.
Yeah.
And it needed to play out this way. Yeah. And I think everything that happened, like everyone being dusted and everyone dying, is all of what Doctor Strange saw.
Yeah, but at the point, I can't remember now, but at the point that Strange looked at future things, was Gamora already dead?
Yes. Thanos was on Titan, because obviously that's when he reveals to Peter that he killed her.
Yeah.
So he's already on Titan and already has four Infinity Stones at that point. But then he gets the Time Stone from Doctor Strange. Yeah. Goes to Earth, he gets the Mind Stone.
Yeah. But I just, like, when... Because it was a little bit before he arrives on Titan that Strange does his weird twitchy thing. I can't remember the exact timeline. But, I mean, it's weird because Guardians 3 is announced. But I could actually kind of see Gamora being dead for real. Like, Zoe Saldana, she seems like someone who potentially would have been more circumspect about how many movies she was contracted to.
How do you think that impacts Guardians and Star-Lord as well? How does he become... How's he fallen in the final Guardian, or the third Guardian movie after that?
It'd be interesting to see him getting over that. He's a sort of glib space cowboy character. He'd probably be a real downer. But
we know that Rocket's great at looking after men who can't emote properly. I just had a quick question about Gamora's death on when we're up at the top of Everest or wherever it was, Castle Grayskull. You know when Gamora's shock. You know, there's that moment where she's like lording it up, and it's like, "Oh, you fucked it. You don't love anything." Mm. And Red Skull's like, "He's not sad because he's
the tears are not for him."
Yeah. Did you see that coming? Did you know that was going to happen? Because I knew, like, as soon as we got up there, I was like, "She's getting chucked."
As soon as he was like a soul for a soul, I was like, "Yeah, she's gone."
Yeah. And I didn't. Gamora's smart. Like she knew.
I agree, but you know, this has been Gamora's like number one fear for like it seems decades that Thanos finds this out that this is where the Soul Stone is.
Mm.
I wonder if she was almost just caught up in like the elation of it. The like you stopped and just
blind to it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought it was really weird. It took me a while to figure out what she was getting at. When she was like really happy, I was like, why is she happy? She's about to die.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, she doesn't know she's about to die. Oh.
Yeah, I think for me, I was like, the second we got up there, I was like, oh, die, he's gonna kill her. But I think you're right, Dan. I think it was, her mission was like, any way that he could be thwarted. And because we've only seen now a bit of their dynamic, and I think it's clear from the beginning, even when she was a little girl, that he had this, like, fascination with her, like, this parental thing. We don't see it as much from Gamora's side. We've now seen Thanos' like sadistic attitudes towards Nebula, but he must have done horrible things to her, to Gamora too. Like the way he trained her to be a killer. You know, he said that he wanted her to sit in his throne. He must have been raising her in his image. So I can only assume she's just been so traumatized by and seen all the horrible things to do. I think the idea that he could love probably just isn't in her mind.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's anyone in the audience who didn't see that coming.
Yeah. Okay.
No, and, but I guess that's one of those moments where we were kind of in on it, and that played to the effect of I didn't need that surprise. I didn't need it to be a surprise that he threw her off. I just needed the suspense to be like, Gamora, fucking take one step further back.
Yeah.
Don't fucking do it.
I think there needed to be something that would draw out his reaction a bit more, though. Because I think if she immediately ran or he immediately grabbed her and threw her, it would have been harder to believe, oh, he does actually love her. Yeah. Like the way he cries and the way he plays it. Yeah, I think maybe her coming across as a bit clueless at that moment was just done to stretch him out, which also brings me to the other thing of I mean, I understand the sort of need for Thanos's sacrifice for to have this emotional element, but like, is the death of Gamora like fridging?
What's fridging?
So fridging is something that happened in an episode of The Flash. I can't remember which episode or which iteration of The Flash it was, but basically his girlfriend is brutally murdered by his enemy and like cut up and put in his fridge, and the villain like leaves him a note saying, look in the fridge, you know, and then that kind of puts him on this path of like, it puts The Flash on the path of like this total like revenge thing. And so kind of, and it was such a brutal death and unnecessary for that particular character, that fridging has kind of become a term used as like a trope of when a female character is killed for no other reason except to advance the plot for a man.
What's in the box?
Exactly.
It's Gwyneth Paltrow's head?
Yeah. Exactly.
You didn't say there was spoilers for other films.
Well, come on.
So I'm just kind of curious what you guys think. Like, if it was a necessary death, or if it was just another in a movie that has relatively few female characters offing one for the sake of advancement for a male storyline, for both Thanos and Quill advancing their storyline.
Yeah, I think there had to be a death which moved the plot forward, and I think it was logically hers.
Yeah,
I think there were other, like Loki and Heimdall didn't really push Thor that hard. He had revenge, but he was mainly for the death of his people. I don't know. Am I downplaying the fact that it's a woman? Maybe. For me, it felt right.
Yeah.
It felt like it fit in the narrative. It didn't stick out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah.
If it was. From the example that you've just given, so my whole knowledge of fridging is from what you've just said.
Yeah.
But if it was a character, if it was a female character that had maybe not had character development and plot, I'd be like, yeah, it is. Where this Gamora is like central to this whole story.
Yeah.
Gamora has been tied directly to Thanos ever since her first minute on screen. And this has almost been what her whole story has been leading towards, has been running away from Thanos, not letting Thanos find out about this stone. And I feel like this moment was written before Guardians of the Galaxy even happened.
Yeah.
That
she should fail so profoundly.
Not necessarily fail, but be a domino in a line of dominoes that ends up in Thanos getting the Infinity Gauntlet. That's one of the few moments that I think in the MCU has been planned all along. In their overarching story, they went, this happens. And that's why we've never heard any reference or seen anything about the Soul Stone this whole time.
Yeah.
That's why I think it's not fridging, based on the example you've given. But, you know,
how close. Do you feel like it is?
I don't. I've seen other people asking the question, and there are some. I've seen people that feel quite strongly that it was. That it was unnecessary for this character to die in this way. For her, I think also the issue a little bit is that it was a death completely without agency. Like, if she had, if like it was something where he had to kill her himself with like with a weapon, like a sacred knife or something, and she fought like hell to keep it from happening with the skills that he had taught her, sword fight, that type of thing, and then he was just, you know, more powerful than him. But to treat her like, for her to have been a weaker female character grabbed and thrown, I think was problematic for some people. At the time, I was just very moved by the death. I kind of felt like it was, like it was something that kind of needed to happen in the greater story. But yeah, some of the sort of questions I've seen some other people asking has made me think about it a little bit more. And I think it might also work that it is just like a tragedy that she was this like strong, formidable woman, and at the end she couldn't escape from what path she had been put on as a child by this sadistic monster. And sometimes you can't escape that, no matter how hard you try.
I think that's really interesting about the point of her being dragged, being pulled along, because I don't necessarily see that as a male-female power dynamic. I really read that as a parent-child, because he's so much physically bigger than her.
True, yeah.
It almost looks like when a mum's pulling a kid along in the supermarket. I thought it
was a big analogy to when she first takes his hand as well.
Oh, interesting, yeah.
And you see his massive hand being like, come with me.
Mm-hmm.
And then he does the same at that, and that's how he brings her into his
and
life.
And she pulls back like a child. She doesn't use any of her skill. And I don't think that's a removal of agency. It's just that she's so infantilized.
Compared to Thanos as this big father.
She goes back into child mode, I think, with him.
I think I was a little bit disappointed looking back that I think there could have been a moment of just, I don't know, just something more from her to fight against what.
But she does have that on Nowhere. She does go in with the knife and she does stab him.
Yeah.
But she kills him.
Yeah.
It's just a different
reality. I thought he was dead.
Yeah. I thought he was dead too. I was like, if Galactic shows up right now, I'm going to lose my mind.
I was like, that's
mind.
It. Thanos is gone. And we're gonna, I was like, someone's going to come get this Infinity Stone and go bonkers with it.
Yeah.
And I was convinced. I honestly was more shocked than Gamora when he did the Reality Stone reveal. I was like,
that was great.
What?
He already had it.
Yeah.
That was so good.
Double bluff.
DB. Marvel hitting us with the DB.
Yeah.
Woo. Wow. Speaking of more deaths, so let's just go through some death scenes.
Okay.
Really quick, because there's a whole other set of characters that I've been missing out on talking about, and I love them. Vision, actually dead?
I think, but I don't know like how much Suri was able to save of him. Like, she quickly did some stuff before she closed it down and then had to fight Black Dwarf or whatever his name was. Can I just say really quickly, the CGI for the most part was amazing in this movie. Even Black Dwarf was fine. What the heck was going on with Proxima Midnight? Why did they just use a woman with prosthetics?
Well, we're going to come on to the Children of Thanos in a little bit. But
anyway, sorry, go on.
When Vision gets all greyed out,
I think he's dead.
I think that's done.
Yeah,
gone.
Oh my god, I don't think so.
Okay,
I think Vision's coming back.
I think if they turn back time, I don't think he'll have ever been created.
Ooh, interesting.
So I just think he just won't exist. And maybe there's something about Scarlet Witch, like, loses her memory of him or something like that. I don't know.
Oh dear.
If I could turn back time.
I think we're getting some sort of bit of Vision saved somewhere.
I think so too.
To maybe reincarnate in a Jarvis-like way somehow.
Could be on Scarlet Witch's wristwatch. Hey, baby.
That'd be creepy.
You know,
this is my former lover. Wristwatch.
Vision,
what's the time?
I was really happy to see Friday back. Speaking of people in people's devices.
You don't like Friday?
No, I do. I do. I like Friday because I get to see my Irish accent.
Okay, you like her because
you literally
Irish
talked
accent.
About Spider-Man a couple of weeks ago.
You said you. No, we said like Karen. Friday is Iron Man suit. Oh!
Sorry, just all of these female voice interfaces.
I like her.
Yeah.
Clear the rest block.
Wow. And I guess one of the final death scenes. So do you think Vision's for real? Yeah?
Yeah.
Yep.
Heimdall.
Yes.
Gone.
Idris Elba is very happy to be out of that contract.
He's used the final power of the Allfathers.
Yep.
Can you imagine making that much money just lying down?
he
didn't even stand up, and he'll have been paid so much money.
He literally didn't get out of bed that night.
Just laid there. Someone put the dreads in, put some blood in his face, and he literally just said, "I call on the power of the Allfathers," and then like CGI stabbed. Rainbow road over his face. Come on.
Anyway,
raking it in.
Oh, incredible though. I mean,
good on you.
Heimdall's not had the biggest of journeys.
No,
but it was a good.
Probably
one.
The easiest time of it. So, yeah.
Loki, defo dead. Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Not sure. Jew is out.
Really? Yeah. Why?
I mean, he did look pretty dead, but
freaking got his neck shattered.
He even confirmed it like on screen, like no resurrections this time.
But he's the god of mischief.
Yeah, there are a couple of bits where he goes off screen and comes, or like goes out of screen and then comes back on. But I don't want to admit, but I think he's dead.
The thing that makes me question it is that he says to Thanos, "You will never be a god."
Yeah.
And I think there's something in that, that Thor and Loki are actual gods and they have some sort of power that is more powerful than a titan.
Yeah. I also think it's sad that like Odin gets a sparkly, twinkly, disappear death and Loki's just got to lie there all bloody.
And blue.
And blue.
That's because he's an elf.
Yeah. No, he's a frost giant.
Frost giant.
Which Thor was, Thanos was really shocked about when he was like, "I'm not Asgardian." And Thanos' like, face was like, "Yeah, what?" And it was as if it made a big difference.
Yeah.
It was, I'm going to kill you anyway. So it was like he was waiting for him to go, "I'm not Asgardian. I'm immortal and made of brick." But no, it was just another plea bite waiting to be crushed.
Yeah.
Is that all the hero deaths? Is there anyone I've missed there aside from dusting?
I think that's
God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. The other deaths that happen are children of Thanos.
Oh yeah.
Who all get canned. Go through them one by one and we'll save your best to last.
Okay.
But I was surprised at how easily they were killed. Are they the children of Thanos?
Well, I say yes and yes and no. You go through your death.
Well, no, I was going to say I was surprised that Ebony Maw died first.
Yeah, he was the best one.
He's the best one, and in the comics, he's insanely overpowered.
He was very overpowered in this.
Yeah, but like, and then dies.
Yeah, but I think like that was always just a surprise. He was just so surprised. And I liked that it was something like so out of left field and like an earthen movie franchise like inspired this death that he just didn't see it coming. And
he was too easy to kill for me. He seemed like the toughest one, the smartest one and the toughest one. Yeah. Too easy to kill.
I just had to clear the board to get to the big bad.
Yeah, we could just talk about so much about this movie. So Children of Thanos are great.
Yeah,
I didn't realize that the two who take on Vision and Scarlet Witch are married.
Someone told me they
were married.
Supergiant and Proxima Midnight.
Yeah, they're a couple.
Wait, the stone guy.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
I didn't know that either.
She was not upset when he got exploded. I don't remember that from
the comics either, but it might have been just a throwaway line or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've got Proxima Midnight. Corvus Glaive as well.
Oh, is he the dwarf?
Yeah, he's the dwarf-like guy.
Okay. I did like the very first introduction of Maw and the big rock guy, mostly because like when Spider-Man comes in and stops that claw, it just reminds you again that like Spider-Man is so strong. Mm. He's so strong. Yeah. I freaking love it.
Oh, they definitely powered up the heroes in this movie.
Yeah.
But Proxima Midnight, you're not a fan of?
I mean, it just... In a movie where it's so much of the CGI looks so good, anytime it was proper like Uncanny Valley. Every time I like was looking at her face, and I don't understand. Really? Yeah, I thought it was really she looked like what's the name of the guy who's the villain in Justice League?
The Taurus or something.
Steppenwolf. I thought she looked like Steppenwolf's daughter.
Wow.
And
she's cool in the comics. She looks so amazing in the comics.
Well, I like that she was like this massive like really like. Powerful lady, but like why couldn't they have just put some prosthetics on the like Zoe Saldana gets like properly greened up every time, just stick some horns on the lady, what's the problem?
Yeah,
anyway,
I think they did lend a hand though in Scotland, another one of those amazing chair in your seat movies.
Yeah,
and the train goes by,
awesome,
you get a little hint of awesome. Cam, but it's just a shadow.
I love that Black Widow is the first character to take down one of the baddies in the whole film. Like, Scarlet Witch couldn't manage it, Vision couldn't manage it, and she literally comes in, does a little twirly thing, uses her own weapon against him, which is always a Black Widow trait, and just, like, sticks a knife in. And I was like, like, that was Cap's moment. You know, he got the train moment, but actually it was Black Widow's moment.
Yeah, well, the turn-up was Cap's moment, but after that, absolutely, it was... pretty much all Black Widow. Falcon flew around a little bit, but...
And to say she gets nearly nothing in the film, there was that moment, and there was another one which was really Black Widow, where she goes, where they're on the battlefield, and she goes, but she's not alone.
Yeah.
And oh. it was just really clever. Like, I always think Black Widow's writing and presence is just really smart in these films. And
I agree.
I'd have liked to have more of her, but
you're right, she was great.
I'd like to add more of her in this, but do you think with the limited screen time that Cap got and his Secret Avengers, do you think, you know, adding Winter Soldier into that as well, do you think, looking at who survived at the end of this movie, that they're going to be leading the way in the next film?
Yeah, I think so. Because there's nothing to say that Tony can get back to Earth, because he's used most of his suit now.
We've got Nebula's ship.
Oh yeah.
So that's,
well, she crashed it.
She did crash it. So unless they can fix that bad boy, they are stuck there. They've got no sling rings.
how did Thor?
Rainbow Road.
Thor might Rainbow Road up there.
Oh yeah, could do that, I guess.
Yeah. Because he rainbow roaded from nowhere?
From
the Dying Star.
Heimdall wasn't there with a big sword to, like... Nidavellir.
Yeah. He rainbow roaded from there.
What's Mjolnir?
His hammer.
There's a little Thor throwback there.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. I was a little bit sad that... there wasn't space for everything.
No.
We had to cut corners somewhere, which is absolutely fine. But I was really disappointed at Bruce and Black Widow's
reunion.
Like, for how much space that relationship got in.
Agreed.
In Ultron. Was it?
Yeah, Ultron.
And then rewatching Thor Ragnarok recently, and you saw her play that. You saw that message coming back saying, "We're losing you. You're going off." It just felt like a huge miss for me that there wasn't a bit more space given to that.
They haven't been reunited all that long, so I can only hope that, we'll get more in the next movie. They had stuff to
that do. First when she's just turned around, it's like, "Hey, Bruce."
Yeah, that it's was.
Like, she's probably playing it cool, hiding her emotions. It's what she does. But
it's been 2 years, so.
I'm with
you. She's got old beardy cap.
She's got beardy cap with her now.
I thought we were going to see a scene later in the movie that, maybe mid-battle scene or something that referenced it, but we just got... The whole movie was this weird...
Yeah, that like, was that,
his CGI in the Hulkbuster was not good at the end.
Oh, when he was standing there with his head kind of down, I was like, oh, that's not good. That's not good.
But Hulk in this movie was good in the first 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Aside from that. I mean, seeing the Hulk get his ass handed to him by Thanos was a great way to show you how strong he is.
Yeah.
Totally.
Like, what a better setup of make him fight the strongest Avenger.
Yeah.
Great.
Speaking of, Hulk and Widow's relationship, I thought the really odd kind of dichotomy of, the lovers in this film really interesting. There was a kind of running thread of, how you don't sacrifice lives. Like, Cap was constantly saying to Vision, even though Vision was like, that's what you did 70 years ago. He was like, we don't sacrifice people for people, and that seemed to be the ethos of the film, except for the lovers, Peter and Gamora, Vision and Wanda. There was a one part of each of that relationship that was adamant of being like, you have to kill me. And I thought that was really weird that was sort of mirrored on two different kind of fronts that was happening, and this really weird kind of death via nobility versus death via love, which it was so odd that that Cap was making this really profound point, and then you had people that were loving each other saying pretty much the exact opposite, like asking someone who you love and loves you to kill you.
But how do you raise the stakes in a film where the stake is half of the universe is going to disappear?
Yeah.
How do you make things feel more emotive or harder or more difficult? How do you make choice harder in that circumstance? Well, you do it where two characters have more at stake, don't you? And I think that's maybe why they use that as a device. Otherwise, it's just buddies or friendships. Mm-hmm. And actually, the only real friendship I think that is probably at that level is Cap and Winter Soldier. Yeah. And we've explored that. You know, till the cows come home. So maybe it's just they felt like, maybe Iron Man and Spider-Man was another one that perhaps took that up because it felt a bit more family. But maybe that's the only other technique that they had to make it feel more, to take it up.
No, I completely agree. I'm not saying that I thought it was a lazy choice or anything like that, but I did think it was really interesting that they made the point to clearly say, I'm not letting you make, like Cap saying, I'm not letting you make this choice. And then the person turning to someone that they love the most being like, please help me with this choice. And I actually quite liked it. Like I thought it added a lot of, like you said, like kind of a lot of power and emphasis to those decisions. But considering that I've actually really liked that throughout these movies, kind of romance has sort of taken a back seat a lot of times, which has been so refreshing, and it felt much more front and center in this film.
Did Nebula ever tell Gamora not to tell him where?
No.
Or was she too in pain not to say?
Yeah, I don't think she could. Okay. I don't think she could speak.
Because I guess that would be the only other instance where someone had said, no, sacrifice me.
Yeah,
but then
I think that was implied a little bit, though. Maybe, I don't know.
On the flip side, you have that... so you've got that message of the, you know, we don't trade lives, but then you've also got the a soul for a soul.
Yeah.
And Thanos easily makes the decision. Yeah. Within seconds. For everyone else, I think it helps show you why everyone in the movie is making difficult decisions. Mm. Thanos himself is making difficult decisions because he believes in good motivations. But the difference is, he doesn't stall in making them.
And it's the stalling that helps Thanos succeed as well.
Yeah.
Like, Scarlet Witch could have taken that thing out of his head ages ago.
Oh, yeah.
And, when Peter finds out that Gamora is dead, that messes up the mission as well. Like, they're the moments that help Thanos win, whereas Thanos can deal with that decision-making and that helps him progress towards his goal.
How did they fit this? Honestly,
they had a lot of post-it notes.
This movie just had to be not a train wreck, and it'd be
adequate. I mean, are there, being 100% critical, are there any moments that you absolutely despised in this film?
Because,
I think I'm probably the most critical about a lot, and there's not that much in this film that I... Maybe that a lot of it was set in space is the main thing that I struggled with, but... Apart from that, this was a...
I think the moments that I despised... Oh, despised is a strong word. But the moments that left a poor taste in my mouth are... I'm sorry, Peter Dinklage. No.
Yeah,
that was trash.
What? Why didn't you like him?
It's just the metal hands and the...
I thought it was really sad.
It was really sad, but did it have to be... giant Peter Dinklage?
I mean, I didn't mind that so much. For me, it's... I mean, he's doing his Game of Thrones voice. It was the whole, you'll die, you know? I felt like it just sort of hit a bit of a... with everyone playing it sort of so straight a lot of ways, I felt like his was very performative, which I didn't like as much.
Yeah, and, you know, I think the reason that I'm saying giant Peter Dinklage is... it just took me out of the movie because we'd been talking so much, and another moment in the cinema I literally heard everyone around me going, is that the guy from Game of Thrones?
You went to a very noisy cinema.
The midnight showings are like that. I don't know. I don't know how the experience must compare when you're not tired and awake on purely caffeine, but you can hear everything. Yeah. And I think everyone's just so excited, and you've definitely got the nerds there.
You
want
to share the experience. Like, you want to be sharing the experience.
Yeah, you've definitely got the nerds there, and I'm one of them, who are like, you're all talking about stuff you all know about, and if anyone's saying something, it's because they're talking about the exciting bit of the movie.
Yeah.
And that's kind of passable in cinemas. If it's someone on their phone, you can get lost. But if it's someone going... oh my god, as if that just happens.
The second time I saw it, there were two girls behind me that every single time someone showed up on screen, they were like, it's Loki. It's Cap. Like, oh, it's Black Widow. It's like, shut up.
Thank you.
Like, shut up.
Maybe you're in the audio descriptive screen.
Maybe, yeah.
It was Friday in the back. Yeah. Loki's on screen.
the big boss man's on screen. Oh, it's Tony. Top of the morning, Tony. Come in, you watch.
But yeah, him showing up was one of my least favourite moments, just because it popped me out and I was like, oh, God.
They need to stop putting such major Peter actors Dinklage. Into bit roles.
Yeah, it was a bit weird.
Take Martin Freeman out. Take Jeff Goldblum out.
Yeah.
Jeff Goldblum wasn't a bit role. It's the little... It's when they're established as a character, you get used to it really quick.
Mm.
Where Peter Dinklage was in it for so little time.
Yeah,
it was and weird. Just thrown in out of nowhere.
Mm.
That I was like, oh, wow. At least I got a heads up with Jeff Goldblum in the trailer.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Aside from that, I think... I didn't really... something about it, and I'm with you, I really like Drax and Mantis. I just hated the bit where he's like, he's a god, he's a glistening god, and everyone's touching his muscles. And
really like the bit where Drax was like, you can't see me.
Oh, that was weird. I thought that was invisible.
Yeah.
That was maybe a moment where I was like, this is a long movie. Is this necessary?
Yeah. It's like, we got that, but we didn't get a moment between Black Widow and Bruce Banner.
Yeah, exactly. Like, but like, totally. I would happily have sacrificed this for like 2 more minutes of like, to challenge Shuri.
Shuri got no ending in this film.
No.
Like, is she still with us?
Is she still with us? Well, who's dusted? Tell us, Dan.
The Coen brothers.
Coen brothers.
That was a little throwback there. The Russo brothers were on an American television show, or a newspaper or something media related, where they confirmed the fate of some characters who were not on camera in Infinity War. So I'm going to read them out. And there's kind of 2 categories here. There's dusted, there's not dusted, and there's can't reveal because it may be a spoiler.
Ooh, okay. All right.
Okay. So read into this what you will. But how about Howard the Duck?
Oh, dusted.
Dusted.
Not among the victims.
Oh, wow.
Wait, does not among the victims mean it's...
not dusted.
Not dusted. Okay. What about Lady Sif?
Not dusted.
No, because she's in the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Not dusted.
Oh.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, she had a choice of that or just getting, like, axed by Cate Blanchett. I'd choose dusted.
Yeah.
How about Ned?
Oh, not dusted.
Not dusted.
Maybe a spoiler.
Oh.
Man in the chair.
What about Aunt May?
Oh, dusted. Otherwise, she's freaking out right now.
Survived.
Oh, she's going to be so sad. Oh, Peter. Oh, God, his dusting was so traumatic.
Let's not do it.
I don't want to go.
I don't feel so good. Oh, God.
Hey, Mr. Stark. What's wrong? I was like, please. Every time it changed to someone else and they were on the screen, I was like, please not them. Please not them. And then it was like Mantis. I was like, that's okay. And it was like Star-Lord. I was like, no.
And it's like, I couldn't believe how many people went. Anyway, sorry, go on.
And it was, when Black Panther went.
Oh, not expecting that.
No, I was like, yeah, you're going to stay. Oh, what?
I thought Okoye was going to go. Like, I thought. Anyway.
Okay, so another one we've got is Shuri.
Oh,
survived.
I bet they can't say.
Can't say.
Yeah.
Betty Ross.
Oh, I hope she's gone.
Dusted. Bless her.
Dusted.
Oh,
she's one who cannot bother coming back when we turn back time as well.
Wow. Okay, final one is... oh, wait, I've got 2.
Ooh.
We've got the actor who played...
Abomination.
Loki. Or Thor, the actor who played Loki.
Oh, so Matt Damon.
Yep.
Dusted.
Yeah, he was dusted. Oh. And then finally, Jane Foster.
Oh,
dusted.
Oh, can't reveal.
Can't reveal.
Oh.
Jane Foster's coming back.
He says potential spoiler.
Oh, are you kidding?
Wait, what about they didn't confirm Valkyrie?
They didn't cover everyone.
Oh, what about Korg and Meek?
I think they're on the other half of the Asgardian ship. Okay. They're fine. Meek's probably maybe dead to fit in with the whole jokes about is he dead? Is he alive? Stepped on him. Then he's alive.
I can't believe. So, you know, like, did Thanos kill me? Or did Thanos kill dot me? I can't believe I died and you two survived.
I refreshed twice.
Oh. Did you? Did you? Were you tested the first time?
No, come on.
I tried to do it again, and I still died.
I actually, I survived, but all my family dusted, and therefore I've gone to Japan, and I'm turning into Ronin.
Excellent.
What about Ant-Man?
I think that perhaps at the end of Ant-Man and the Wasp, he's going to be standing there, and maybe she'll fade away.
So, wow. Who is it's concern? Someone's confirmed that Michelle Pfeiffer...
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Michael Douglas and someone else have filmed a scene together for the next Avengers movie. Michelle Pfeiffer's?
For the next Avengers movie. Michelle Pfeiffer's in Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah, so apparently they've filmed a scene together, which would hint that they...
are in the next Avengers movie.
Yeah.
And I love Michelle Pfeiffer.
Me too. I'm very excited to see her.
She can survive.
Yeah.
Wow. Already. Look, really...
we could talk forever.
This is probably one of those episodes where absolutely we could sit here until the next movie came out and just keep talking and theorizing. But I tell you what we're going to do, listeners. Unless, Martin, Anna, have you got anything else to talk about this movie?
I think I'm done.
Okay.
For now.
No, I just can't believe it's over. And I can't believe Spider-Man dusted.
Oh, well,
God.
It's not over for you yet, listeners, because this is our 18th episode. But we will be back next week because we know you can't get enough. We're going to do a wrap-up episode of the Marvel Universe, talk about everything we liked, everything we disliked. We're going to give out some awards.
Oh, yeah.
Can I have a theme tune for the awards?
Yes.
Have you got it prepared already?
The Marvel Awards.
Is that it? Okay.
I'm into it.
We're going to have... some ratings.
Yes.
We're going to have lots of potential conspiracy theories.
No more. Good. Yeah. That's what everyone wants.
We're going to have some chit-chat about whether we'll be back in the future.
Yeah, we will.
Will a Marvelous Lunch Break return?
Who's dusted?
Who's survived? Who's dusted?
Who can't reveal for spoilers?
And you guys, we're going to have a quiz.
Whoa.
Oh, my God.
I'm very excited.
Oh my God.
Wow.
For the Marvelous Lunch Break podcast quiz.
Can I have a theme tune as well?
Okay. How about a Marvelous Quiz?
No, I'm not going to do another one. Because Miss Marvel is set in the 90s, Captain Marvel is going to be... it's a podcast. Wicked quiz.
You've had one too many of those beers. And Anna, I'll tell you what, why don't you come prepared with a whole wrap-up of the Marvel Universe in under 10 seconds?
Holy crap. Okay. You know what? Can I do it in a minute?
1 minute.
Yeah. So no 10-second, no 2-minute, 1 minute.
In summary, let's lay that Infinity Gauntlet down.
Oh, man. Okay.
So, listeners... we really hope that you've enjoyed rewatching all these movies with us. I'm aware for the pedantic folk out there that Phase 4 isn't over, and we are doing everything we can to secure top talent for future episodes of A Marvelous Lunch Break. But please be patient.
You said we're not
with
top talent.
No comment.
And I'm trying to secure you. But for now, please, if this is the first time you're listening to us, great, go back and listen to our historic episodes.
Apart from Incredible Hulk, that was a bit ropey.
Yeah, we suggest...
I love that one.
Maybe don't listen in reverse order because Black Panther was just previous to this, and that was one of our older format episodes.
Yeah.
Still a goodie nonetheless. If you want to sponsor us, it's a little bit too late, but maybe season two. really thank you for listening so far.
Yeah.
Please, if you've got any topics you want us to talk about next week, get them to us. Hit us up on social media. Anna Marvelous, 2 N's, 2 L's on Instagram.
Yep.
Sorry to take that away from you, but it's nearly the end of the season. I finally memorized it. At Martin Loves.
Yeah.
Twitter and Instagram.
Yeah.
And I'm at DVM Preston on Twitter and Instagram. Okay. Share the podcast, like it, subscribe, review it. You can listen to us and all our previous episodes on Apple Podcasts. On Spotify. Martin, where else can people listen?
Audio Boom, Stitcher, Castbox,
Flipboard,
SoundCloud, Flippity Pod. Just put us in Google.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Google it, right? Our SEO is lit. Other than that, thank you very much for listening.
Stick around for the after credit segment.
Yeah. It's not ripe. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Post-credit scene.
Oh, baby.
This is going to be the final post-credit scene we ever do on season one of this podcast.
OMG.
So let's get excited about it. We spin to New York City, and there's Maria Hill and Samuel L. Jackson in a car
Did anyone like think about them throughout the whole film? Like,
no, I did not think of them.
I was just like, I didn't feel them missing.
Yeah. But I never ever think about them until they show up.
Yeah.
SHIELD,
right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's part of SHIELD's mystique and mystery.
Yeah.
But then, obviously, we see the helicopter crash. We see people starting to get dusted in the street. We see Maria Hill.
I was not expecting them to go. I was so sure.
I thought they were going to be the people who, like,
get everyone
built
back together.
The team back together, because it was
especially Fury.
Yeah,
I couldn't believe it. But I'm so glad they did it. I feel like it really grounded it, bringing it to New York and seeing the actual impact of this happening, taking it away from the battlefield and everything. It made it feel like super real. I was so sure that Hawkeye was going to be in this. They were going to cut away to him, and he was going to be watching his family dust, which is what's going to bring him back. Possibly as Ronan to kick some ass in the next steps, in the next movie.
Maybe the fourth Avengers film will open with that.
Maybe.
Oh my god.
But then
that pager drops.
Yes.
Oh wow. And it takes just like sending. You wait and I'm like, please show us something. The logo appears. Now, what did that mean to you?
Well, you know what? For one second I was really sure it was going to be the Fantastic Four logo. You know, you got into my head, Dan. You got into my head.
My theories are now published on the BBC.
I know.
Just saying. I can refer to this podcast and that theory when it comes true. Yeah. Oh, my. I didn't know why I expected it, and I should have been.
Mm.
It's going to be Captain Marvel. I mean, I marked out hard when it was the Captain Marvel logo. Loads of people around us did. Yep. I was like, so goddamn pumped for this movie.
I just have no idea now how any film going forward is going to fit together the puzzle pieces, the timelines. Like, nothing makes sense anymore.
Welcome to the future of the Marvel Universe.
Oh, man.
Like, this is what the Marvel Universe has been missing, is conspiracy about what's going to happen.
Tell you what's been missing, a female-led superhero film.
And yeah,
we're
baby.
Getting one, finally.
All of that. March next year?
Yep.
Or Christmas, according to you.
Unless she shows up in the next.
Oh my god! Well, I think, you know, whatever happens,
we're here.
There is excitement ahead of us, and we will hope to be back and talk to you about it definitely next week, as we've said. So, thank you very much for joining us for a marvelous lunch break. Tune in again next week for our final of the season. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful evening, and goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.